He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Just the guy I was looking for. I got a message at the start of the week, and I don't know where to begin. I guess with whooping cough cases, Dr. Brown. I was reading that whooping cough cases have now tripled in the U.S. just this year. Of course, raising concerns for parents as the illness spreads rapidly among children. Wow. Whooping cough. Here we go. I feel
like we talked about
this last year, but
we've talked about this.
Yeah. Holy Toledo. I don't know what to say about this. What's going on?
Yeah, so this is actually, I mean, listen, I am in general concern about things that are vaccine preventable. I mean, I think there's a lot of choices that are being made, and one of the choices is not to get vaccinated or not to get, you know, updated vaccination. Bordetella pertussis, which is whooping cough, is actually a very infectious bacteria, and it leads to a very significant illness in children. It's so severe that what happens is their airways, so their large airways, will actually close when they're trying to get a breath, leading to that whooping sound. That's why it's called whooping cough. In adults, it can lead to a very severe cough, which can lead to, you know, it's so severe that it can lead to either passing out or vomiting. So it is actually a very severe bacterial infection that is part of vaccine prevention.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, pertussis is included in the vaccine. If you ever, you know, if you let's say you get a, you know, a cut or a, you know, we our classic step on a rusty nail, you know, you go to the ED, gets cleaned out, and then you get a tetanus shot. That tetanus shot also includes whooping cough. So it actually includes Bordetella pertussis in it. Yes. So, again, this is a concern. So the problem with this vaccine is that a lot of us, if not all of us, have actually received it. The problem is that it does wane. So after 10 years, it may not be as effective.
Okay.
So that's one of the problems about that. And we talk a lot about vaccines, and one of the problems is that vaccines in particular for bacteria can wane. And this is one. So I think we're going to end up talking a lot about, you know, vaccine preventable outbreaks, because I think that's now the trend. And for whatever reason, we don't need to get political in this, but, you know, for whatever reason, we are seeing, you know, less vaccinations that are happening at this point.
Well, I was going to say, and I know that you do not need to be pulled into politics. Again, Dr. Brown is a doctor, not a politician, is not going to give his political views on things. And again, I also am not affiliated with either party, Dr. Brown, but I do say that this is, regardless of opinion, both sides of the aisle have said that they are very concerned about the border and have been concerned about the border. And obviously two different administrations have handled it differently. So you may have different opinions on that. But you can't really ignore the fact that you've got people who have been coming over the border. And unfortunately, I don't know if they're getting vaccines in these other countries. I don't know if when they're getting here that's an immediate thought for them.
Sure.
I think we would be remiss to not point out the fact that when you don't have those vaccines in place, or we don't know people's medical histories, that certainly has to be factored into why we're seeing these unbelievable rates. I mean, in a year, we've tripled the cases. I mean, that can't come from nowhere.
Yeah, and it is very interesting, because I think there's a combination of things. You know, again, just from a scientific standpoint and a medical standpoint, there are several pieces that are associated with this. One, there needs to be a start, so someone has to have it. And then that goes. But then there's also the, you know, person that has it, and then the person that didn't get vaccinated. So it has to have a connection. And remember herd immunity?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that before. So at some point, given any illness, at some point, if there isn't enough people who have been vaccinated, then it becomes a isolated event to a cluster or even an outbreak. And that's sort of the other concern it is. So we're seeing this year in particular with the flu that, you know, it's a bad flu season, and we expected it to be a bad flu season. But also, you know, there's less people who got vaccinated this year for the flu, and therefore there's less herd immunity. So it spreads more like wildfire.
Well, I think it's something that is, and it's not just, as we mentioned, Dr. Brown, you know, whooping cough. Again, RSV, flu, other respiratory illnesses, I mean, they continue to circulate as well. And something that I've noticed, Dr. Brown, is, interestingly, I was going to ask you about this, was a lot of kids are getting sick, obviously. But even when they are testing for flu, RSV, and COVID, if they're getting negative tests, doctors are still sometimes treating them for the flu. I don't know if you've noticed that, but are we seeing a lot of false negatives? Are we seeing that even if you don't have one of the big three, if you will, that you could still have symptoms, and that just getting treated for flu is still effective than doing nothing at all? I'm not sure.
I think, you know, following your individual physician is always important. In general, if someone does not test positive for the flu, the medication for the flu should not be used. There's a lot of complications secondary to that medication. We don't need to go into the complications, but there are side effects, concerns, and issues with giving a medication that has complications. Whenever you give a medication, it's always a risk-benefit. So is the benefit of giving the medication better than the side effects or potential issues related to that medication? In this case, if you don't have the flu, there really isn't an indication. The flu, like Tamiflu is particular what I'm talking about, is very specific for treating influenza and doesn't really treat other viruses. Like you can't use Tamiflu for COVID, for example.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. So it's a very specific, and it's a very specific time. So when it is started, it really should be started within the first 48 hours of the flu symptoms. So again, I would be very careful about giving a medication when there isn't a diagnosis there. A lot of times this is supportive therapy. So you can always do supportive therapy. Over-the-counter medications to help with cough and cold and fevers are not a bad thing. And they've been shown to, you know, that you'll still have the same course, but it won't be as traumatic and won't lead to other secondary complications if you are using the symptomatic treatment. Again, the over-the-counter cough and flu medications.
We have Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health here, our infectious disease expert. And Dr. Brown, there are debates happening again, and they've been going on for a very long time, but they seem to be back in the news again. Raw milk consumption. Now, that is legal here in Connecticut. It's legal in a couple of dozen other states in the country. But there are some states, including Delaware, that are now debating whether or not they should allow the consumption of raw milk, the sales of it. And it's, again, it's very controversial. But the big, I think, takeaway here is, you know, the people who are proponents of it, they love having raw milk because they know where it's coming from. It's direct from the source. It has all the nutrients that are you know, pre-pasteurizing it. And, of course, if you pasteurize it, you have a better handle on any sort of foodborne illnesses, bird flu outbreak, things like that. That's also been coming up in the news. I would love to get your take on this.
Sure.
I would love to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So raw milk obviously is one of those things that, you know, infectious disease docs get a little nervous about, as well as doctors in general. Listen, I'm going to go right in the middle here and say, if you know your source, you know where it's coming from, and you're comfortable with it, then, you know, I'm not going to be sort of that person that says absolutely don't do it. In fact, I'm not one of those people who say absolutely don't do it. There are clearly some benefits associated with, you know, with using raw milk and not going through the pasteurizing process. But remember, a pasteurizing process, the whole design of a pasteurizing process is to eliminate bacteria and viruses that are part of the source of a product that is, you know, really a protein source. It's basically designed, you know, it is sort of the factor that we use to grow bacteria. So you need to be very careful about it. They can carry Salmonella, E. coli, Listeria, Campylobacter, Brucella, Yersinia, and interesting enough, can also carry Mycobacterium, which is, as we talked about before, is a version very similar to tuberculosis.
Mm.
So you need to be really careful, and avian influenza.
Yeah, well, and I think that's why it's back again.
So you got to be careful.
I mean, it's a combination, right? It's because, you know, RFK Jr. was just confirmed, and I know this is something that's been very controversial at the political I don't know why we're talking so much politics today, Dr. Brown. I apologize.
I know.
I apologize for that. No,
I'm apolitical here.
No, I know. And we're doing, I think we're doing a good job.
We're doing a good job.
But I also do know, obviously, the bird flu has been very prevalent. And as we talk about, you know, things like egg prices and how can we get it? Is it possible that we can get it from the eggs, the chicken, the milk, all that? It's coming up again where people are saying, okay, but this is where you could spread it. But I think, like you said, Dr. Brown, I think that you got to have the option. Because I think if you're going direct to a local farm that you have a really good rapport with, you know how they handle their animals, and they're very transparent. You know, hey, we detected something. You know, I think I'm not sure if you would recommend, like, even, you know, just until we get through this bout of bird flu. That's why it seems to be coming up right now, is with all the bird flu stuff. Like, would you take a little breather maybe, or would you just really check, you know, more often with your farmer that you're working with?
So personally, I don't see the benefits, and this is personal. This is my personal opinion, is that I don't see the benefit of raw milk. Again, that's my personal opinion. I think you just need to be really careful. As I said, we talked about eggs and transmitting bird flu through eggs. It's more likely to get it transmitted through milk than it is through eggs, because it is a medium in which virus can grow. So that's the concern.
Yeah.
So I would be just very concerned about the possibility of using it, and that you weigh, you know, do your research, you weigh the benefits of doing it versus not. But it can't hurt to hold off considering where we are right now.
Yeah. I think it's something to really think about. Dr. Brown, always love having these chats with you. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again next week.
My pleasure, Melissa.